for the touch of your lips, dear, but much more for the touch of your whips, dear. You can raise welts like nobody else as we dance to the masochism tango.
Tonight on the show, we talk about how I bring absolutely nothing to the apocalypse. I am joined tonight by one of my dear friends, who is also the founder, producer, bon vivant, man about town, Trevor for Ambassador Radio Media. How are you, Trevor?
I'm doing well. I am thrilled to be on the show with you. I know we've talked roughly maybe even a year about doing something, so it's just really, really nice.
So great.
Thank you for mentioning my stuff. It's been on hiatus for about 6 months, but something's coming. So,
I get it, man. Yeah. So what, you know, we could have chosen many a movie to talk about, and we chose the 1984 Bruno Mattei classic Rats Night of Terror. I have to know what your background is with this.
Okay, well, first off, we come from a generation that the VHS store, which eventually became the DVD store, was for many of us a stomping ground. A lot of time for our parents to do what they needed to do. Also, an amazing amount of friendships, like, started gathering around people and their love of genre, especially horror. I was not raised to like horror movies, but when I started hanging out with my best friend in high school, Eric, he introduced me to The Exorcist and Evil Dead 2.
Nice.
And that led, like, a lifelong obsession of going into a mom and pop video store and being like, okay, A to Z. And usually it would be in the, you'd have your horror section, your sci-fi section. Every while, you have a cult and a foreign section.
Right.
And that's how we did it. So we saw so many films, a lot of Bruno Mattei films, because the only way they were in the United States was on VHS, some DVD. And many of them were, like, the print that we watched that Severn has right now still says Vincent Dawn. I mean, that's the prep. That's hilarious because that's a very common pseudonym for Antonio Margheriti. So it confuses some people. But my love of Rats is, I think it's the best work of Mattei and Fregasso.
Ah, interesting.
That's why I love it.
Okay. I love that you said that. I love that. Yep. Just because my experience with Mattei and Fregasso, you know, I love Night Killer. I'm probably the only one out there who loves Night Killer, but I fucking love Night Killer. Yes. No, it's so funny because they did fight over that because, you know, Mattei was brought in to do a lot of the gore stuff, you know, the extra killing stuff, because it was supposed to be this psychological thriller. But no. And they also did this softcore Euro trash favorite called 3 for 1. And so I love my Fregasso, my Mattei type stuff. So this was one of those movies that I got introduced to when I was probably around, I would say I was probably about six or seven. No, I'd say I was six. I was six.
Nice.
We used to have a show here in Florida called Dr. Paul Bearer Creature Feature.
Very cool. What part of Florida?
In that case, it was Tampa. So,
okay, cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
So we grew up watching that every Saturday. That was a thing. And he used to say, he's like, and our horrible old movie today is called, and he would have the movie. But I remember this very clearly because the very first time I ever watched Dr. Paul Bearer, it was Rats. And it was, our horrible old movie today is called Rats. And he's like, and it's really horrible, or my name isn't Dr. Paul Bearer. So I've seen this movie probably 30 times, I would say. So
it's like our version of Independence Day. Whenever it's on television or somebody has a DVD on, flop.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I've owned it on various media. You know, I thankfully was able to watch it on Tubi. Shout out to Tubi. And so I was able to be able to enjoy it again. But I love it. It's schlocky and crazy and has the worst dubbing. Oh my God. But by the same token, you know, it's this really cool, you know, takes place in 2015 when apparently we thought it was just going to be a
Well,
desert wasteland.
this goes out to my daughter, actually. When you start watching the film, it basically explains Fallout. So,
Oh,
like,
that's
that
right.
whole, like, Star Wars-esque introduction, I'm watching it because this time really paying attention to it because we just went to Vegas to visit a whole bunch of Fallout New Vegas stuff. And I'm watching it going, So, I mean, just change a few words, and that's the base concept of Fallout.
That's really funny. I had no idea. That's so interesting. And I always forget that you're a dad. That's
Dad of
wild.
two. Yeah.
A dad of
Ingrid and
two.
Ira.
Amazing, amazing. What can you tell me about, if you know anything about the actual like production of this, other than I know it was shot on the same set as Once Upon a Time in America, the
Yes.
Sergio Leone movie. And I know that this is strictly Rome. But that's pretty much all I know about the
Well,
production.
the
So.
production's interesting because it is a handful of what you have to call Mattia Fragasso production. Why there's always this, kind of misunderstanding between those two is they learned that they could make two movies in the time span of one. And Fragasso was young, and Fragasso was, really, really intense. And the first time they really met was when they started this film, The True Story of the Nun of Monza, which I was thinking around 80 or so. And they ended up coming up with this idea of, like, well, why don't we just basically move everybody around and film the next film and use the budget we didn't use? And that's what happened with The Other Hell. And the thing is, Fragasso, Mattai was an editor. When it came down to the end of the day, that's what he did, that's what he understood, and that's what everybody said he was good at. Okay. But remind me to come back because this film we're talking about, Rats, has one of the weirdest editing credits ever. There's a reason why a lot of people look familiar in this film, but they don't look extraordinarily familiar. Greta Garretta, who's famous for Umberto Bava's Demons, and she's an American actress, just specialized in doing that part in Italy for years. And then basically, except for Massimo Vani. Now, Massimo Vani had long running, he'd been a star and everything. But most of the people in the set were so amazingly happy because these were stunt people or these were extras. And they were getting paid like something equivalent, like the star made, about 1 million lire, which is like nothing at that time. But they were all happy to have this. What seemed like a ensemble cast role. And it was another thing is the rats. There are rats, but I've heard stories from cast members that, based on the fact that rats had to be put on them, and also they did is a lot of what you see on people are actually mice, and they remember getting crates in of mice. And then pouring black on them and stirring them around. A couple cast members claim that, but I did not hear it for anything from Fragasso or, of course, Mattai.
That's fantastic.
Actually, if you don't mind, I'd like to read a quote by Fragasso, which was it came out as a wonderful book back in the 90s. This is when finding text was crazy, but it was translated into English as this book called
Oh,
Spaghetti
Spaghetti
Nightmare.
Nightmares!
Spaghetti Nightmares, yes.
Oh, yeah, Spaghetti
Amazing
Nightmares!
book.
I
Yes.
had that book back in the day. Oh my
I
God.
still do. I wish in Spaghetti Nightmares, Claudio Fragasso is interviewed. Bruno Mattei is not, which is kind of funny. But he's asked, what can you tell us about Rats, Night of Terror? Rats was a very ambitious film that consequently it w was scaled down to a large extent during production, obviously. Unfortunately, it's almost impossible to make a film of this kind since the producers have no faith in them from the onset and simply leave them to their fate. The fact that Rats retained a shade of dignity is thanks to Bruno doing his job, to the actors and the actors' goodwill, and to the objection of modernity I gave to the special effects. Yeah, he worked on special effects too, and settings and dialogue. The public, however, being unaware of what goes on behind the scenes, has always held us directors responsible for this film's failure.
Oh my goodness.
And I thought, as far as everything, as far as, because the fight's never been really bad between them. It's just kind of argumentative. And I thought that quote really summed it up. I mean, he says about, yeah, it was a cluster cuss, but, dude. And that's another thing about Mattei. Everybody I've watched interviews from, crew, actors, et cetera, continue to say Mattei was so amazingly professional. He'd show up in a suit and tie and everything. And Fragasso was the opposite. And yeah, it's just really interesting.
I love how they interview Bruno Mattei, and he's just like, I don't. He goes, I don't really like any of the movies I've done. He goes, I
Yeah.
wish I could go back and redo all of the movies that I've done. But I love that about him because he's just like, yeah, he just had a probably good time doing it, but
Exactly.
I think
Well,
the.
Fragasso, actually, to paraphrase, he's interviewed for the new Severn release of Bratz. And he opens up by talking about some of his early films. And this is out of his mouth on video. He considers Werner Herzog and Fassbinder extremely influential in his work. So he says, when I did this film and this film, I was, looking to make something like Fassbinder or something like Herzog. And then he stops. And can I use profanity?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. He stops. Looks around to the interviewer and goes, I don't know how this fucking thing happened. I mean, that's one thing you gotta love about Fragasso. He has this amazingly, laid back personality.
I love that. I
Yeah.
love that. That's so cool. Now, so can you tell us anything about the music score? You're a big music guy. You know pretty much, I think, more than most people
Well,
I know about music.
the
So.
compose. Well, the composer did a few things, Luigi Cesarelli, but they were mainly for Mattei, for another one of his twofer films, kind of, which was Violence in a Women's Prison and Women's Prison Massacre. You could put Women's Prison, and there's like 300 films that pops up in your head, and you're like, which
Absolutely.
one? So, but no, that's kind of like the big thing. Otherwise, he.
He's
Lesser known composer.
strictly Mate, right? Okay,
Yeah.
I gotcha.
Yep.
All right. Now you mentioned the lead actor in this movie as being, you said he was a stuntman. And is that the actor who plays Kurt?
Yes.
Okay.
His name is, and I hope I don't butcher it too badly, is Octaviano Del Ache. And he appeared in basically bit parts or is stuntman. Now, when he teamed up with Bruno Mattei, which was this film, he then started to become kind of a regular for him, which he then showed up in, Cop Game, Double Target, Strike Commando 2. It's just like that. But he also is in a lot of these post-apocalyptic films too, and also did so. He did a lot of the stunts in these, including Fall of New York, Escape from the Bronx, New Barbarians. Very, very prolific, but had no, he did, but he never really let anybody know that he wanted to eventually become a leading man. So back about 82, 83, he's working on a Bud Spencer film called Banana Joe, directed by this iconoclastic director named Stino, from Italy, who needs to get his due. But it's at the De Polis Studios or something of that nature. I apologize yet again if that's wrong. But apparently, Mattei is there a day that Octaviano is doing stunts for Banana Joe, and he just sees him. And he goes, "I want him." They're like, "What?" "I want him for to be Kurt." He walks over to him and says, "Hey, I'm so and so. Will you be the star of my movie?" And he flips. And that was the start of that. The thing is, Mattei and Fragasso don't forget their people. It's a lot of these, there's a lot of nepotism in these films. But no, Kurt is a great role.
There are a lot of characters. We will probably not be able to name them all, to be honest,
No.
yeah, Kurt kind of looks like a cross between like Barry Gibb and Kenny Loggins,
Yeah.
you know, and
There is a Gib to him. I
he's
didn't think
got a
about
and he's got
that.
a long red scarf. He's very fashionable, you know. And he's the leader of this motorcycle gang, you know. And he's just a really cool dude. I love his character, and I love how he does eventually sacrifice himself for the better of, you know, for video and chocolate. Yes, I so the names in this movie, let's just talk about this for a second. So poor Greta is named Chocolate, not racist at all. And then you have the blonde guy who is Video,
Video, yes.
named is like, my parents named me that because I like to play video games.
Games.
And then we've got, like, I mean, literally, we've got like an off-brand riffraff. We've got, you know, Italian Kim Richards. You know, we've got the long blonde hair. That's Myrna.
We have Duke, who God only knows what the hell Duke is.
Duke is an asshole,
Well,
is what
Duke's an
Duke.
asshole. Well, it's funny. Apparently, he was enough of an asshole that he just disappeared.
Oh,
Because the guy who played Duke, Henry Luciani, has three credits,
Oh,
and this is the
wow.
last one. And
That's
I've done
interesting.
Google searches. I can't find if this mofo's alive.
Oh, wow.
And then
Yeah.
also, I found ones that didn't even have this date of birth.
Oh, boy. That's wild.
But
And then,
I mean, he plays a great antagonist.
oh, he's great.
I
He's
mean,
really
that's
great.
even for an Italian Fellini film of that time, really convincing.
Oh, yeah.
I
Total,
mean,
total jerk. And just a wee bit rapey. Just a
oh, horrible.
tiny, tiny bit rapey. But yeah.
This is, I mean, for all you that didn't live through, a time period that we did, this is a film that can be very problematic, but understand the time period and, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it
But
is.
I don't want to hear you say anything bad about it and go, "I love the Monster Squad."
Oh, yeah. No. I
Yeah,
mean,
so
there's plenty
it's
of,
that
trust
theory.
me.
Like, if you can understand,
Yeah.
the issues that surround the Monster Squad, but appreciate it for what it is and what it did,
Absolutely.
great. If not, I don't know why you're even listening, probably to
Yeah, and I mean the other thing is,
your.
like, obviously if we're going post-apocalyptic, probably a lot of us have lost all our social graces, absolutely, at this point.
Yes,
So,
yes.
not to mention these people have been living underground for a good portion of time, and then they have been brought up to the light.
225 years.
Right. So they've decided, okay, well, now we're going to do something a little different. We're going to go explore this, you know, decrepit town and everything. There's a lot. I mean, like I said, there's a, but my all-time favorite character in this whole movie and her horrible dubbing, is Lilith with her bodysuit, her cape, and her long dark hair. She who has terrible taste in men. Absolutely terrible taste in men, because I can't remember his name. Lucifer. Lucifer is
Lucifer.
her.
Well, like there are two people that just totally like disappeared, because
Oh,
I think
yeah.
it's Mon Dieu Evier or something. It was a French actress that played
Yeah.
Lilith.
And she's just gorgeous.
Oh
Oh my
yeah.
God.
I
Wow.
mean, these are people who were literally behind the scenes, like
Yeah.
major behind the scenes.
But just a cool chick.
I mean,
Yeah.
I'm talking like in the back of the scene. So
But
it's really interesting to see, because I mean, it's As far as a group, it does have all the stereotypes you would expect. I mean, before we get talking about the whole concept of genre in this film, there's a little bit of the film that kind of works out like a very, tight Western.
Yes. Okay. Very interesting that you pointed that out. Yes, there is a very Western, we have a gang kind of together feel to it. Absolutely. I agree with you on that. I think that's probably because you got this like you do you have a saloon inside this abandoned city, as it were. And that's yeah, the whole place is infested with these rats, and they have no, they're sort of in their mind thinking like, oh, well, rats, and they're harmless, and they're not going to do anything, and we'll just move around them, like Lucifer and Lilith want to have sex. It's like, all right, we'll just gonna have sex. We're gonna have sex in front of people, by the way, in this it like you do during an apocalypse, in a sleeping bag, and then they get chastised because they're being too loud. And they're like, "If you're gonna, what is it? If you're gonna fornicate, do it out there." Like, yeah. But they're an interesting group of characters, and there's so many of them.
I know, and that's what makes it really special that, I mean, okay, they're loose characters. It's the loosest of the loose definition, but it's done in a way that the dialogue is believable, the issues are believable within the confines of a fantasy film. And I think that I don't know which to say, that the potential directing prowess of Bruno Manetti or the directing prowess of Claudio Fragasso, because once they separated, their movies were really bad.
Yeah, see, I think can't have one without the other,
Yeah, I
It's yeah.
mean,
They're the peanut butter to their chocolate, you know what I
yeah, and
mean?
it's not, I know it's fun to make fun of these directors. And yes, I mean, I will be the first to say I think, Lamberto Bava is, kind of subpar, but was probably the best television director that Italy ever had. It's kind of weird that there are horror aspects still going on. And these films are pretty much almost made for early video eventually. They're going to get a very, very small run and just right to video stores.
Absolutely.
But there's this, especially in the post-apocalyptic genre, there's this charm. And that's one of the great. Now, I've always referred to, and I have to put Fragasso there too, but both Bruno and Fragasso, I think, are what I like to call Felony terrorist, because let's look at rats. So rats is not a Jaws knockoff.
No.
Rats is actually probably based on one of the books by Frank Herbert's Rat series, and also is much more influenced by 81's Road Warrior. So you have
Okay.
Road
Yep.
Warrior mixed with a little bit of the Jaws idea, although I think probably somebody saw Food of the Gods
I would
or
say this
something
is
like
more Food of
that,
the Gods than
or
Jaws.
because I think it was
Absolutely.
post this, because I, you know, you outside of water Jaws films that also use the plot elements of Jaws, there are not a lot of crazy animal films like we had
No.
in the United States. You have this film, Rats, and then you also have the only fictitious film by Franco Prosperi, called, I believe, Wild Things, which is about animals just going crazy. And it's, like Day of the Animals
Day of
if
the
it was done in
Animals.
Rome. And those two films stand out in the genre of films to me because they are trying to mix something. And most of the post-apocalyptic films that came out of Italy were pulling from two sources: 81, Road Warrior, or Escape from New York. And you can almost put them in a line. But it's also interesting that there's enough of the post-apocalyptic to Rats, Night of Terror, that in Germany, 1990 Bronx Escape, both Enzo movies. The third film in a trilogy of riffs was Rats. So this was actually marketed in Europe as a sequel to both those Enzo Bronx films.
And those are all post-apocalyptic type films?
Yeah, they're
Oh,
all
okay.
post-apocalyptic films. I mean, at the time period, I mean, there are probably a good about 30, 35 potential Italian, Spanish productions, co-productions that were blatant ripoffs of either Carpenter's Escape from New York or Miller's Road Warrior.
Okay, I
And there's
gotcha.
a lot. And there's some really, really awesome ones, and there are ones that are, you know, like Land of Doom, which came out, I think, a year or two after, that are amazingly laughable. But no, we talked about Western. That goes into my, you know, idea of, you know, Matei and Fragasso, you know, being, you know, okay, maybe not the best in certain things, but they're really good at like mixing stories up. And, you know, it's like the Dr. Butcher MD school, except it's a little bit more, you know, together. Is I think that it just produced something that I think to some of us, it tingles our brain correctly.
Yeah. I love the way that the film looks overall. I like when they're walking through sort of the abandoned city at night. It reminds me very much of Don't Look Now when Donald Sutherland gets lost in Venice. It has that very sort of empty, deserted feel to it. That's very eerie. And then you have obviously the rat stuff is just fun, in my opinion. And then you have the really cool, like the
I mean,
crazy
it's not as bad
debris.
as watching Calamity of Snakes, guys. So,
Yeah.
I mean,
So, I mean,
yes, there is some animal
could be worse.
mistreatment, but don't worry. It won't scar you for life like that film.
I mean, when they get in there and they find the food, they are double fisting raw ingredients like a vegan porn. Like they are pouring like grits and random stuff all over themselves, and I can only imagine. Like I said, I don't bring anything to the table in an apocalypse. Like I don't sew, I don't garden, I can't shoot a gun. So I probably like at this point would not be as cool as, chocolate, but I probably wouldn't be as insufferable as Myrna, because at some point Myrna literally turns into Jackie from Jaws 2, where you're just hoping someone's gonna haul off and slap her, because she really does start to lose her shit at some point. She's just like, no, I don't want to be, which is why she gravitates towards Duke, because Duke is, trying to step up as this masculine leader, and she's kind of like, hey, like if he's gonna protect me, then you know what I mean? It's like, I'll do whatever he
They
says.
work that really well as far as like, you know, the dynamic of the group and how they work together or work against each other. I also think that at the time they were probably watching a lot of movies because there's elements of, you know, even things like, you know, Logan's Run, is definitely, I mean, I could name it from a couple films, but you know, with the whole element of like, you know, this is a success story of people living on the outside, primitives, as the films call them, actually being able to grow food, actually being able to distill water. Somehow they're coming from somewhere.
There are a lot of themes of desertion, but there's also a lot of themes of like now the rats have sort of become I mean, honestly, these people have come into the rats' home, right? So they are wrecking havoc. They are pouring food all over themselves. They are doing all of these things that are very wasteful. And so it's this reversal of, it's like, oh, well, we're the nuisance now, right? Humans are the nuisance. Humans are the vermin. And the rats are just trying to live their lives, man. So my question to you, having seen this movie as many times as you have, is that was there an actual like human experiment going on there, and then the experimentation with the rats like got out of hand, and now the rats are, sentient beings, or Or
don't think there's really any explanation to the rats,
you like.
except for maybe the non-explanation. We assume the audience is just going to assume that, okay, we're doing 225 years. Primitives have gotten out or left the underground bunkers. Some have learned to actually survive. But after a apocalypse, most likely from nuclear war, 225 years, especially, probably, but nobody went left that first two generations, that something else would become the supreme species. And that to me is that, it's like, what's going to live in New York after the bomb? Cockroaches. In this case, it's, yeah. So you get the, so, and then, I
My
mean,
worst nightmare.
yeah, well, the worst nightmare is got to be, at the end of the film. And I wanted to get your take on this because it confuses me still. So we get to the end of the film. They're rat poisoning the place, which
Well,
is.
yeah, that's the other thing that I wanted to ask you. And this is like, because I still am confused about this part because I've seen this movie as many times as I have. There's a time, there's this very moment in this movie where the rats have stopped regarding what's going on, and it's making it so that they can like walk through them and walk around them, and they don't have to worry about being attacked. And then all of a sudden, a switch flips, and then they go right back to being fucking cannibals. So what happened there? Because
I
I
don't know. I mean, it's, I don't know if
nope.
it was supposed to happen in that 225 years, but I mean, it's okay to give away the ending,
Right,
right?
or there's like a
Okay,
plot
because I'm
point
assuming
that's
if we're
missing that
listening,
we don't know
yeah.
about, you know?
So, okay, so like all shit has broke loose. There's only a handful of people that are still alive. And suddenly, out of one of the, areas from the ground, come this what looks like a large hazmat crew. And they're definitely blowing something. And I think it's even referenced as rat poisoning in the dub that I have. Which is intriguing because it is pushing the rats in, but as you can see, it's also almost killing the few people who are left. And then when they're just so happy, like, you found us, you found us, the person, humanoid, removes his gas mask or their gas mask, and they're part rat.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I th the base thing is, like, ooh, shock, like, oh yeah, Bruno, what are you? Let's
Yeah.
make them rat people.
Great ending.
Party is that, but if I want to dig a little bit deeper, and I think Fergasso actually is probably, his work does every once in a while touch upon things. There is definitely like a theme of hierarchy and, species hierarchy in this film. Whether it be the rats to the humans to the rats. But the most frightening is the rat person, the rat human, the rat humanoid, who has gotten to a point that rats are now pests. I'm probably for a Fergasso and Mathai thing reading too much into it, but of the films, this is the closest one that comes to fitting into making some statement about how society could even go more wrong. Also, you're just kind of starting the whole Reagan thing and everything, and
Let's face
even
it.
before that, it's kind of fucked
Yeah.
up. So,
Yeah, I was gonna
I like
say.
to think that, at least Fergasso is looking at the news going, hey, Bruno, remember this asshole did over there? Let's put this in our movie. So,
Absolutely. Well, yeah,
yeah.
because I think Reagan's whole thing was wanting to exterminate, anybody he felt was not going along with his
This is an
bizarre.
actor who gave people away to McCarthy.
Yeah, he's
Yeah,
horrible.
he yeah.
And turn the other way during the AIDS epidemic.
Exactly.
So, you know what I mean? Like,
And that's just the start. Don't even get me started on
yeah,
Latin
I know.
America. Don't get
We
me
can
started on Latin
get
America.
into the and the band played on conversation. We're gonna be here for a while. So, but I feel like I think that the commentary is essentially like that, you know, you're no longer in charge, right?
Well,
Like
it's
you,
also very important to remember, even today,
rat
and
overlord.
going back, pre-code especially, is your lower budget films, your exploitation films, if you want to call them that, or whatever, usually have a lot of hidden social commentary. And especially for countries that were coming out of, fascism. I mean, Franco in Spain, and to an extent, the war and the guilt that held over Italy with Mussolini, that all ends up seeping in a very modern way to the films from, horror films from 65 up to, at least the 90s. Definitely in the 90s with Soavi. So horror has always been, even if you don't necessarily mean it, like, I don't know if this was supposed to be a message film, but you got away with a lot more. And to revisit these films and apply them to the time period as opposed to just entertainment, always find some subtext. So.
No, that's very interesting. I feel like I would agree with you on that. I think that this film does have many messages, absolutely. I mean, a lot of things is like, look at what we're doing with our environment. Like, look at what we're doing to our earth. And, you know, and that was then, for God's sakes, that they were commenting on this. I don't even, you know what I'm saying? Like, what we're doing now, you know, and, yeah, I mean, I think, and there's something to be said for the fact that, like, when they're in the greenhouse and then the greenhouse just turns, you know what I'm saying? Because like they first get there and it's like, oh, look at all these fruits and vegetables that are all ours and we can partake of all of the hard work that
Flower.
somebody else
You
did.
might want to save some of that flower. I mean, it's kind of the
Oh.
base for everything. And
And then the water, you know, they're like so excited about the
then we have
water.
the famous Greta scene.
Oh God, where she covers herself with white
Oh,
flour and
white.
she's like, I look like you guys.
I'm
Ha ha ha.
white.
I've lost my ability to dance, you know. Like she's oh God, I love her to death though, like in just in real life because she's such a feminist icon and
I
she's
haven't watched it yet, but apparently she made an updated version of the song for Severn.
Oh, that's
I haven't
funny.
watched it yet, so I don't know, but it said, Greta performs video for song and film. I
That's
haven't
awesome.
watched it yet, but I'll let you know.
That's gonna be great. Oh my God. No. And so you have her and she's such a strong female character, you know, and we didn't I find a lot more strong female characters, truthfully, in Italian films than I do in American films, especially around that time period. But it's a really good character study. It's a study about hierarchy, it's a study about loyalty, how loyalties are tested during, you know, these really horrible situations. You could replace rats with any other invasion. You know what I mean? Like zombies, you know, whatever. Like,
Which separates this from a Jaws ripoff. Because that, there's, it's very much, as opposed to, well, these rats could be human. Wait, at the end of the movie, they are human. They're humanoid. So,
Right.
it is definitely playing something with, species hierarchy, if nothing else, as
Absolutely.
it were to pertain to the apocalypse. Now, another thing about these movies, and it goes very well with rats, is a lot of these movies pull influence from biker films and a lot of early biker films. And to some, it works. This would be, I don't know, a good comparison. Okay, so maybe this is the young one. And most of them is just like the worst case. It's like a bad gang movie. And
Right.
that's kind of my biggest issues with a lot of Enzo's films and a lot of the other apocalyptic films. Where this film, it confines them. The characters, like, okay, this is, not everybody's walking away. You're not going to like everybody. You're not going to care for everybody. There's going to be a lot of surprises, and stereotypes are going to be flipped. And I do. I think it's, as far as a piece of work by these directors, writers, whatever they want to call themselves, it's really good. Now, real quick, before I wanted to mention the editor.
Oh,
Yeah, Mathai did
yes.
not edit this mofo. He edited
Okay.
everything else, but it was actually edited by a gentleman, and this is really wild because I love his work, called Gilbert Chiellone, or Chiellone. And his first films were for the wonderful African director Osamé Sambin, and that was Maladie and Amitati. And he also worked on Night of the Hunted for Jean Rollin. How this guy gets in the picture, I don't know, because the story is Fragasso met Mathai literally with celluloid all over him, and that was his obsession. Like, he was most at home in editing, but somehow
That's
I don't
wild.
know. But I mean, if nothing else, I mean, the director Osamane Sembene is amazing filmmaker out of Africa, and there's a connection to this. There's also an Alan J. Pakula connection. And that is Goretta Goretta's first film was an extra in a party in the Alan J. Pakula film Rollover, I think. You can't be working with the same people on two movies all the time. So, I think that's why some people laugh them off, but they're fun.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Now, so my question to you as a historian is, how come, why are
Okay.
there no documentaries about Bruno Mattei, or even Joe D'Amato doesn't really have a documentary? Like Fulci has a documentary. He has like a Fulci for Fate kind of
Well,
thing.
yeah, well,
But
there's multiple documentaries on Fulci, and there's even a mock documentary
right.
of his, interviews and everything. I tried really, really hard. I mean, I'm surprised that Troy Hathworth and, people like that haven't jumped on the, Mathai Fragasso book, because you cannot, there are academic books written about Mathai, but they're in Italian. None have been translated. But I think you're going to see over time that, these are movies that are going to get a little bit more, if not respect, at least an understanding of the fact that the people that were making these films were obsessed with cinema. They were totally obsessed with cinema. They loved what they were doing. They had fun with what they were doing, to the point that it almost became too much, and they just wanted to do it all the time. And then it became like, oh, we're given this much money. Oh, how about if we cut it in half, cut the shooting in half, do some drugs, and then move on to the next movie.
Oh my God.
And that shows in the movies, but I think it also shows the heart in this really messed up, almost parody creativity that you have to say Fragasso has. If he honestly started in cinema wanting to be Fassbinder or Herzog, there's got to be a mass amount of parody and just satire to Fragasso that he decided, okay, I'm going to ride this wave. But you watch this film and you go, but then you watch it a couple times and you go, that's pretty satirical.
No, I know that even D'Amato went to the same film school as a lot of the, would say more higher brow Italian directors. But yet, like I said, there's just a lot of room for there to be something. I mean, goddamn, YouTube is YouTube, and there's maybe a handful of like mini documentaries, and it's usually just a guy standing in front of his video collection going like, but even in the DVDs that I've purchased or the Blu-rays that I've purchased, there's no like Colors of Giallo really is That's the closest we have to any kind of a one
There was a
giallo
Something
segment.
Pora documentary that came out
Okay.
that was pretty good. And then there's this 3-hour Pleziotechnicy called Eurocrime that is excellent.
Okay.
But I don't know. It's interesting because I don't think there's even a definitive film on the spaghetti western. I think honestly a film just about peplum. There's so much, I don't know. I wish people would think a little bit more about doing that than instead of going, if we put a shark in it and we put anything else.
Yeah, I
Sears an
know.
ocelot.
I know. I feel like a lot of those guys need to be getting their due. Like I'm a huge Grant, we're probably gonna cut this one out, but like I'm a huge adult film historian. Like I am 100% about preserving a lot of the stuff that has come before, and a lot of the gentlemen are passing away. Like Paul Thomas just died, right? Right. So when they're gone, like Bill Margold used to say, when they're gone, who is going to be around to tell their story? There are no books about them. There are no documentaries about them. It doesn't exist.
It's very
So.
hard to find. I mean, there are a couple books, but as far as anything really, it's hard to find. Now, this is something that because we'll discuss it another time because that's also a huge element. Film restoration in general is big for me. And but I was on Sturdy Harvester Sturdy a couple weeks ago, and we did a Mathai film. We did Cruel
Oh,
Jaws.
you did Cruel Jaws. Oh
I'm
boy.
talking about it. I'm watching this film, and Hulk Hogan Jr., who only has like 3 credits to his name, I'm looking at him, like, I swear to God, I either saw porno in the 90s or I saw Hustlers in the 80s, and that motherfucker was in there. And I kind of wanted to ask you about that because I know that once it went to the video work, straight to video, I mean, Rolin, Franco, everybody was just making a movie happen based on what they were making on hardcore pornography.
Like D'Amato, for instance, was a huge softcore guy. Like I, you had like, Passion's Flower and all the,
He was an
Desire.
insert guy too. He directed inserts.
So he, but that's why I'm wondering, like I was as much as, D'Amato, like I watched a documentary, quote, quote, on YouTube about D'Amato, but it was like literally like they cut out a good portion of his career. Like all his softcore stuff was nowhere to be found. And I was like, do you guys just not have clips? Like, 'cause I can name right off the bat, like out of the top of my head, the D'Amato movies I know of, and so I know they exist. Like I
Oh
know the
yeah, I mean,
top model,
also
11 days,
D'Amato did
11
an amazing amount
nights.
of second unit directing. Also, he was another one of those people that was like he could just basically throw him anywhere and he could do whatever. The problem was they were all kind of looking at Jess and going, "Oh yeah, we can make this many movies." No, you can't. No,
I'm sure
no.
there was
They're
probably.
special. They are time stamps of their time period, but some of the scripts were actually could have been really landmark films if they used the actual budget on them. So
Now, if you were going to pair this with another movie, as far as like you were going to do a double feature one night or something, with like Day of the Animals or something to that effect, or even The Road Warrior, for instance, what would you pair Rats Night of Terror with?
I would pair it with a film by Franco I Posperi called Wild Beasts. I referred to it as Wild Things before. And it came out in 83. So it was a precursor. And it's a film in which animals go crazy. And there's a, I think it's a water issue. Something gets into the water and it just causes the animals to go insane. And this and Rats, in my opinion, are the only two Italian films of the 80s that fall into a felony of killer animals that are not in water. And this is like if you had Day of the Animals with a lot more animals in a city with a lot more gore and maybe some kid killing.
Yeah, we love our
Wild
kid
Beast
killing.
is
Yeah,
Wild
okay.
Beasts and Rats in
Awesome.
either order.
I love that. I
So
love
that'd
that
be my
so
double
much.
feature.
All right, so wrapping this up, how could you, if somebody wanted to stalk you on social media, or listen to archives of your show or any of those types of things, where would you suggest they start,
Okay,
Trevor?
well, the first place, and it hasn't been updated in a while. As I said, I've been on a hiatus, kind of creating things, figuring out, what I want to do in 2026, which might include like hiding and leaving the country. But no.
Same.
So the website is www.ambassadorradio.org. Ambassadorradio.org. You'll find shows there, but most importantly, you'll find my socials. If my Twitter's there, it doesn't exist anymore. So, if you wonder, but actually, the best thing I'd say is probably if you there is Facebook, Instagram, but actually, if you want some like pretty much all the shows since I started putting them on online, go to the YouTube
Oh, nice. Okay.
account
Okay.
in ambassadorradio.org.
Okay. Very, very cool. All right. Well, guys, we did.
Thank you.
We entered the apocalypse. Thank you, Trevor, for joining me
Thank you
today.
for having me on. It is a great honor.
This was a blast. All right. So, as always, you can follow Manic Movie Monday on Instagram. So, if you guys want to, email us fan questions, all that good stuff, that is definitely through the Instagram Manic Movie Monday podcast. And as always, my lovelies, stay manic.